This morning I want to talk about fear of consequences. Does our fear of consequences prevent our full access to health, happiness, success? Does our fear of consequences interfere with our acquisition of energy, our translation of energy, our need to preserve energy, and our willingness to express energy? Today I want to explore this idea of being afraid of consequences. Consequences is an idea that is common in everyday life. It's common in religious texts. It's common in conversation of yesteryear. Fear of consequences and consequences themselves are an important aspect of our daily life. Now, we use other words to describe it. We talk about cause and effect. We talk about the things that we've caused. We talk about, and we see this as a biblical reference, you reap what you sow. The reaping is the consequence of the sowing. And so we think of that in many different ways. Here's an idea about how consequences can impact us, and the fear of consequences are so dramatic. If you can just imagine for a moment there is a plank on the ground, say it is 2 inches thick and 6 inches wide and 10 feet long. If you were to have a test in which you had to walk on that plank, the 6-inch wide plank, for 10 feet from one end to the other, chances are you would be able to do that with almost no difficulty at all. If we took that plank and raised it 3 feet off the ground by placing it on a fulcrum, so now it is, or a couple of different boxes or supports, so now it is 3 feet off the ground, and your test would be to walk from end to end on that 6-inch wide plank. There would be a little bit of fear, but probably not that much. If we elevated it to 6 feet above the ground by placing supports underneath it, and now the test was to walk 10 feet from end to end on that 6-foot plank, or 6 feet above the ground, now all of a sudden another issue is, or another factor is added into this equation. That is the fear of consequences. The fear of falling didn't really exist when the plank was on the ground, and it only existed to a small degree when the plank was elevated 3 feet off the ground. But when it was elevated 6 feet or 10 feet off the ground, the fear of consequences, that is, the fear of falling and what that would mean physically, has increased. If we were to take that plank and suspend it between two buildings several hundred feet off the ground, walking that 6 foot, that 10 foot plank, 6 inches wide, now would be very difficult. It is not the walking that makes it difficult. It is the fear of consequences that make walking of that plank difficult. Fear of consequences has been a part of our culture for thousands of years. And in the Christian Judaic traditions, the expulsion from the Garden of Eden is an example of the consequences of disobeying God. It is an example of the consequence that is used to explain many of the ills experienced by humankind in today's daily living. Fear of consequences. Original sin is a concept that was promoted by Augustine the year 438 A.D. Original sin is the consequence, according to Augustine, of being born in that awful state of humanness. That is, just by being born as a human being, the consequence is one is defective, sinful, flawed, and has original sin. In biblical times, and in terms, Sodom and Gomorrah were destroyed because of their depravity. The destruction of those two cities was seen as the consequence for their lack of connection to God. And it's been used as an example to kill people, to be afraid, to harm people, and to justify all kinds of behaviors toward people who we can label depraved. When you look at these fear of consequences is the act of giving up power to some unknown forces or to some unknown condition, and that this empowering is one of the challenges for us. If you were to look at normal political life, normal, that's in quotes, political life today, you can see that there are often negative consequences when the weak don't obey the dictates of the strong. You've seen this on television, you've seen it or read about it in papers and so on, where criminals are caught and punished, but corrupt police officers protect other corrupt police officers. And so you could say, this is an example of the weak experiencing negative consequences, but the stronger being able to be above the consequences. If you were to look at your early religious training, you can recognize that sins were created on paper and taught to congregations as being the causes of terrible consequences. Some of those consequences, we're told, are hell and damnation, fire and brimstone, endless suffering for some of the acts that we have committed. And it is the fear of those consequences, it is the fear of hell and damnation that causes people to not walk the 6-inch wide path of their lives. And in fact, upon examination, you can really recognize the path of life is not 6 inches wide. It's not even boulevard wide. It certainly is not tightrope wide. It is, in fact, as wide as planet Earth and then some. If you look at laws, and you can recognize that laws are created but then applied unequally, and you can see this as if there is a marijuana grower who goes to jail, but a pharmaceutical executive who pushes a dangerous drug into the marketplace for the purposes of generating revenue, even though it is well known that the tests indicate it is harmful to human beings, and that drug over time will kill hundreds or even thousands of patients, but the pharmaceutical executive is above the consequences of that. They can use the corporate umbrella to shield themselves from legal consequences. If you look back in recent history, you can see that George W. Bush and Dick Cheney don't have fears of consequences for having sent thousands of U.S. men and women, boys and girls, to their deaths, or for their decisions that led to the death of hundreds or even thousands of Iraqis. They don't fear the consequences of that because they are powerful. Fear of consequences has been a management tool in individual life and in society since the beginning of time. When we imagine consequences as being unpredictable actions or responses of unknown forces to our unknown activities or inactivities, we can create extremely high levels of fear in ourselves because of the uncertainty surrounded in this. We don't know what button to push in order to get the cheese, and we don't know which button will produce pain. And so it is those fear of consequences that we can not discern the cause of that we tend to hold back. We tend to restrict ourselves, to limit ourselves, to subvert our natural forms of expression. We will hold back, limit, or restrict our energy acquisition, energy translation, energy preservation, and certainly energy expression, for fear of doing it wrong and then having to deal with the consequences of that. We can make fun of, when we watch National Geographic or read the magazine or see a special on television about, quotes, primitive people, end quotes, who are propitiating punitive gods, those gods that are actually operating outside of the action-consequence paradigm. Archaeological digs show that we've been doing that as human beings for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. Human and animal sacrifices were and still are common ways that people seek to avoid angering God, and on the other hand, to please God. In some areas of the world, people believe that the consequence of killing innocent people in a marketplace with explosives and killing themselves will be eternal reward in heaven. That action will produce the consequence of eternal reward due to making God happy. We haven't progressed all that much from primitive men and women if we're still believing those kind of action-consequence relationships. In the United States, we have the highest percentage of our population in prisons than any country in the world. Then, depending on how we translate that information and the meanings that we give to it, could mean various things. In the United States, we could have the highest percentage of bad people, and that's why our prison population is so high. It could also mean that the racial and ethnic groups, and they're essentially blacks and browns, that is African American and Hispanics, make up the majority of prisoners, and it could mean that they're just naturally prone to criminal activity. It may mean that in the United States we just have more laws, and since there are more laws, there are more things to trip over, and it's easier to make mistakes, and then, of course, because we have more police, we have people enforcing those laws, and consequently, we have more people in prisons. So it's just a natural outcome of having a real lot of laws that trip people up, and a lot of law enforcement that make it easier to catch them, and that's the reason we have a lot of people in prisons. It also may mean that certain activities are precluded from certain groups. That is, African Americans and Hispanics are not able to participate in the normal, acceptable economic system, so they can't play that game. Consequently, they have to, and they serve a role of participating in this off-limits economic behavior that serves all of us. So when white children from the suburbs drive into the ghetto to buy drugs, there's a ghetto and drugs to buy. And when it serves the purposes of the powerful, they can go into the ghettos and catch the brown and black people who are selling the drugs and put them in prison. And then they could fulfill other purposes, that is, occupying prisons, which of course now need to be built, and they do tasks. Certain prison industries, telemarketing, license plate manufacturing, and whatever else they do, keeping the warden's lawn neat and trim, all of that is designed to produce certain consequences for the benefit of more powerful at the expense of the less powerful. Now, it's a good idea to have a lot of laws, if you're a police officer, of course, because it gives you job stability and security. And so, in order for police to have jobs, crimes have to be committed, or the fear of crimes has to exist. And citizens have to be afraid of those crimes being committed, and they have to be afraid of the people that would commit those crimes. And so as long as we can keep the fears of those consequences alive, then it's much, much easier for us to be manipulated. Diseases are imagined and marketed by drug companies. And if you look at television advertising, the consequences of not taking the drugs are dramatized. They show the positive side, the happy guy who is now taking Viagra, and he's overcome his condition of Viagra deficiency and consequently can get an erection. And it's extremely pleasing to the woman in the ad that he has now taken a chemical to overcome his lack of ardor about her, his lack of enthusiasm showing up biologically in an erection. She's perfectly happy that he had to resort to a chemical in order to produce that condition. In the ads, there is a law that requires the negative consequences to be mentioned as well. And you'll notice that in the television advertising or in the print advertising, that's not where the imagery is used. That's where they deliberately minimize it, deliver it in a straightforward, non-energetic, non-enthusiastic, non-impactful way, basically speaking in small print. And they are deliberately distorting the consequences. All these great things will happen, and these negative things, it's possible. But go ask your doctor if this is right for you. We are being manipulated by the distortion of that action consequence paradigm for the benefit of the powerful message manipulators. We have been afraid of consequences our entire lives. And on some level, it is probably likely that this fear has helped us survive as a species. If we had no fear of consequences when there was a growl outside of our caves, we would have marched out to see what the noise was. And after a few iterations of that, we would recognize that is not a good idea. So the unknown is something that we may do well to be afraid of. However, when you recognize that some of the consequences we've been taught to be afraid of, it seems as though we've outgrown them on the one hand, but in fact, we've reinforced them on the other hand. For instance, typically, we're not going to go and play in traffic. If you would say, well, yep, I was taught as a child not to play in the street, don't play in traffic. And it was conveyed to us that there were negative consequences associated with that activity. However, if you turn around and watch NASCAR races, or you watch people behave behind the steering wheel on a typical highway anywhere in this country, people who are drinking and driving, speeding, not obeying laws regarding speed limits and so on, and common etiquette, you would recognize that we have refused to fear those consequences, even though it would have served us to pay attention to them. You don't have to be a scientist or a sociologist to recognize the amount of danger, the amount of pain, the amount of suffering, the amount of death and financial loss that is included when we play in traffic driving automobiles. Typically, we don't drink poisons. On the one hand, we recognize drinking poisons, that seems pretty clearly to have a negative consequence. But on the other hand, when poisons are effectively marketed to us, tobacco, alcohol, other beverages, things we can't afford, pharmaceutical drugs, you can see that, the consequences of that advertising are manifold and not necessarily good. The users are the ones that are going to experience the negative consequences from giving up their power. I can't live without this substance, this drug, this thing. They're going to give up their money, and in some cases, they're going to give up their lives. The purveyors of tobacco, alcohol, and pharmaceutical are the ones that are experiencing other consequences that they believe to be more positive and most of us would agree, that the greater concentration of money, power, and influence into their hands is a good consequence for them, but not for us, because that power, that money, that control came from us. We lost it, they took it. We gave it to them, they accepted. In other words, the negative consequences are suffered by one group, I'll call them the consumers, and the positive consequences are enjoyed by another group. I will call them, in quotes, above consequences group. You would think that God would be above consequences. However, if our actions can cause God to become wrathful, that is, God's mood and attitude are a consequence of our actions, we could say that we control God and not the other way around. If we're controlling God, we might want to redefine God. And if we want to hold to that truth that we can make God wrathful, we might want to spell God with a lowercase g, because we've reduced his power, or her power, or its power. That doesn't sound like God to me. Management by disapproval is a behavioral philosophy that I imagined and named. I made it up. And management by disapproval is essentially the behavior pattern of people trying to control other people's behaviors by using the implied pain of disapproval. As a cellular memory, you could make the case that disapproval includes withholding love and affection, physical contact, food. It may also include ostracism or shunning. It could include physical deprivation, starvation, punishment, even torture and death. For obvious reasons, you can understand why we might have, quotes, learned, end quotes, to avoid the disapproval of others more powerful than ourselves. None of those items that I just mentioned sound all that appealing to be the recipient of. Parents disapprove of children's behaviors in order to teach the children, that teach is in quotes, teach the children not to do things that the parents deem as undesirable. Teachers disapprove of disobedient and overactive students who don't make it easy on the teacher. Children disapprove of other children, thereby increasing the power and influence of their own tribes, or, as is now said, posse, at the expense of the other children. Children literally try to accumulate power and control and influence over other children. Church authorities, and any Christian religion, this is true, that God disapproves of us because of Adam and Eve. Mostly Eve, because she's a woman. And the people writing this story are mostly men. God disapproves of us because we're human, we're sinful, and we're flawed because of original sin. God also can disapprove of us, and does, because we violate laws that authorities, that is, the powerful people, claim that are not their laws, but they're God's laws, such as going to Mass on Sunday, eating meat on Friday, etc. That's why God disapproves of us. If every human being is born defective, and that redemption is only available to those who join the tribes of Christians, it may be time to redefine your God. If we went into any city in the world that's noted for the manufacturing of automobiles in the United States or France or Japan, and we waited on the end of the manufacturing line for our newly ordered and newly created car to come off the line, and as we're standing there, our car and every other car is declared faulty, defective, and that it was made incorrectly, would we take a stick and beat the car? Would we punish the car for having been made defectively? I think that's a very large, of course not. We would hold the manufacturer responsible for this set of consequences, that is, the defect of the product. Why would we accept the idea that the consequence of Adam's and Eve's misbehavior is that we all suffer humanness. Why would we think that a God who could create water, the earth, night and day, all the animals, couldn't have figured out how to make a perfect, unique human being by now? When I consider it, I realize that my God knows how to produce consequences that are desirable. That's one of the characteristics that my God has. If God couldn't figure out, and to this day can't figure out how to create desirable consequences in the manufacture of human beings and human orders, how should we be able to create desirable consequences? It seems like we would be holding ourselves to an unrealistic standard. It may pay for us to reevaluate who is creating these consequences. Are we being punished? Is that a consequence that we have no control over? I think we need to revisit the story of Genesis, because you don't need to be a parent for very long before you realize that when you tell your child, "Don't do this," that you have in fact made doing that very interesting and curiosity inducing. You have directed your child's attention to the mystery of that activity, and you pretty much have guaranteed that a normal child is going to now experiment, is going to now explore doing what you just told them not to do. Most parents would know that basically instantly. And I'm not talking about a parent that's particularly talented, you know. I'm not talking about a parent who's been able to create night and day, earth, water, sky, millions of species of life form. I'm not talking about that parent. I'm talking about an ordinary human parent knows enough not to do that. How is it that God is portrayed as not being able to understand that? I think it's time for us to reconsider our fears of consequences in order to determine how we are keeping the healing spirit from ourselves. I think it's time to make up new versions, new rules, so we can devote our energies, attention, and intention energies to the creation of new and desirable conditions instead of rules that are aimed at avoiding negative consequences, that limit our expression, that are imposed on us by ourselves and others. If you were to look at the reasons you do certain things and you don't do other certain things, I think you're going to notice that you considered consequences. Your fear of consequences would have spoken to you, giving you advice not to pursue a certain action or to pursue a certain action. That little bit of awareness of knowing why we do and don't do things, and how the fear of consequences is a voice that is speaking to us so frequently that we're manipulated by it. I bet that the harshest judgment, the most painful criticism, the most disempowering energy exchanges that we experience are due to our own thoughts, feelings, and words directed at ourselves. We are the deliverers of the worst consequences to ourselves. God is not punishing us. We are punishing us. I'm no Bible scholar, but I don't think Jesus, the Christ, is the disapprover. In fact, it seems that his teachings are all about acceptance, to include teaching us about self-acceptance. If you would consider that management by approval, as Jesus would have done it, is a good philosophy, we can shift our focus to creating our ideals in our lives instead of being prisoners of self-made and man-made fears of consequences. The consequences also constructed by men, not God. I would like to end this service with a prayer. Father God, Mother God, Christ, the Creator in connection to all that is, thank you for all of our blessings. Thank you for the gifts that you have given us. Thank you for helping us to discern the light that is you, that will set us free. Thank you for helping us turn aside fear and unbelief. Thank you for recognizing, or helping us to recognize, that we are expressions of you. And as such, we've got the ability to create, command, choose, manufacture the lives that we want. On the one hand, we have the ability to create myriad blessings for ourselves and others, and we also have the potential to cause pain for ourselves and others. Thank you for helping us to make the distinction between the two and choose the healing spirit. Thank you. It is done. Amen.